Today's episode of Open Floor is brought to you by T-Mobile. This baseball season, T-Mobile customers can get a free season-long subscription to MLB TV Premium. Sign up by April 10th at T-Mobile.com/MLB or sign up for MLB TV while on T-Mobile's network. Today's episode is also brought to you by Harry's Razors. Superior razors shipped straight to your door at half the drugstore price. Get $5 off your first order with the code OPENFLOOR at Harry's.com. And finally, today's episode is also brought to you by FanDuel. Now that baseball is back, you can try the fun and competition of daily fantasy, risk-free for up to $10. Go to FanDuel.com and enter the code OPENFLOOR. I think that is kind of where we are with Kawhi versus LeBron and KD. Like, he's kind of like the thinking fan's pick. But at the same time, like, don't overthink it, because LeBron is still ridiculous, and Durant has been awesome as well. So I like Kawhi as like the MVP of the second team.
Yeah, well, that's the thing too, is I think you can make a case that Kawhi is like number two in the MVP voting. I mean, you can make that case for sure, and still there might not be a spot for him on the first team.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line I've got Ben Golliver. Ben, what's going on, man?
I'm honestly really impressed that you're still willing to do this after last night.
Last night was tough, to be honest with you. It's also freezing cold on the East Coast right now, so it's sort of like compounding the misery this morning. Obviously, I'm a Carolina fan. Last night's title game did not. We're recording this on a Tuesday. It'll probably go up on a Wednesday or Thursday. But yeah, man, it was a great game. It was the best college basketball game I saw all year. But pretty heartbreaking at the end. How'd you like it?
Was there a moment where you were already picturing yourself purchasing like a silhouette version of that Marcus Paige karate kick three-pointer, like on a t-shirt and on a pair of sweatpants and maybe on every article of clothing that you're going to buy for the rest of your life? And then all just got taken away from you in a single breath.
So I had a bad feeling the entire game, because some of the Nova kids were just hitting like ridiculous shots, the turnarounds in the lane, and so it wasn't going well. And then even when Marcus Paige hit that three, there was 4.7 seconds left, I think. And I was kind of like internally freaking out. And then I started getting text messages. Like, my dad is not a big sports fan and texted me like, congratulations, that was awesome. And I was like, the game's not over. And so as soon as Chris Jenkins was open, I was like, oh shit, it's over. But you know, it was, it happens. The way I look at it is the UNC team I cared most about was the 2005 team with Raymond Felton, Rashad McCants, Sean May. I followed that team like from when they were high school recruits to that title, and they totally lucked out with a crappy call against Villanova, and I think it was the Elite Eight. It was either Sweet 16 or Elite Eight, but Alan Ray got called for a horrible travel call that sort of swung the game. And so I feel like last night was just this like twisted payback for me and for UNC. And I can live with that. It is what it is. That Villanova team was awesome. Chris Jenkins is great.
Yeah, no, what you were mentioning with feeling like the game's not over, it did have kind of a vibe to that Damian Lillard game-winning three-pointer against the Rockets in the playoffs. I remember being in the arena there and watching the Rockets kind of celebrate because they had scored right before that. And I just remember thinking, like, in that moment, even though there was, like, no time left, like, well, you guys left too much time on the clock. Like, something can happen here. And, you know, similar situation. No, I totally agree. Lots of credit to Nova. Yeah, basically, after watching their Elite Eight game, the way they closed that out, defensive stops, hitting all of their free throws, just being so rock solid down the stretch, I was also in that mentality where, like, they're just going to find a way to win this one way or another. And sure enough, they did. Hey, on that last, the last Jenkins shot. Yeah, I know this is like really digging in pretty deep here for you.
This is an open wound right now, man. Tread carefully.
Well, hey, this is why I mind the
Twitter is just nonstop videos of that stupid shot, and I can't deal with it. But go on.
You're gonna pull LaMarcus Aldridge and delete your social media accounts, aren't you? No. Did you think that was good offense or good defense? Like, were you pissed at Carolina's coaching staff for how they handled that, or did you just think you got beat by a great play?
I mean, I'm not going to let myself go down that road with like analyzing the end of game defense. I definitely, he should not have been that open, but everyone was panicking and it is what it is. It was definitely like, you want to guard the trailer. Like what Villanova did was not that complicated. But, you know, again, they played their ass off the entire tournament. And I'm happy that the Big East is a little bit relevant again. I think it's funny, like, nobody really knew anything about this Villanova team because the Big East isn't on television as often. But all these guys were pretty great. It was hard for me because Marcus Page for Carolina was so awesome toward the end of that game, not just with the three, but to make that layup. And he hit another three to sort of like give them a shot. And as a senior, he's had a pretty up and down career, and for him to come through at the end and then just have it snatched away in the cruelest way possible was pretty tough. But it is what it is. We're moving on. It's a new day. Hopefully it'll warm up soon.
Well, Marcus, yeah. So Paige, he looked like he was in the zone. Like, just the look on his face was like, basically anything he threw up was going to go in. He was operating on a different planet. So it was weird to see them lose. And just on that last play, I thought that they set it up brilliantly. I mean, I was believing that he was about to, Archie or whatever you want to call him, was about to take some crazy shot over two defenders and, running, willy nilly through the paint. And the shovel pass, the timing was perfect. Location was perfect. And then to cross in front of him to help clear the look, I thought was a subtle touch that was just, smart basketball.
Carolina didn't want to give up anything at the rim, which makes sense. They were basically worried about that guy going about Archie going coast to coast. And that's fair.
Like Tyus Edney style. Yeah, no, you can understand what they're doing. They just totally forgot about Jenkins. And I loved his quote. Anytime I get the 1-2, it's going up. I mean, that's an all time classic gunner shooter quote.
And he's a DC guy, so I pull for him too. He went to Gonzaga, and and Josh Hart is another DC guy. So I'm happy for Villanova. They were a pretty cool team, and ultimately it was kind of an underwhelming tournament, but that ending made up for a lot.
Oh, I've been trashing the tournament on every single podcast for like 3 weeks. Yeah. And I got to give that,
streak to keep up.
Well, I've got to give that game credit. That was a fun game. Good game all around. I thought a lot of just steely performances, and I loved the celebration after the 3-2. I mean, that's pretty awesome. Just stand like a statue and have everybody jump and topple you to the ground. I mean, that's pretty good. So
yeah, he played it cool. It was impressive.
Yeah, it was definitely meme worthy, like you're saying. Did you like the fact that Jordan was there, or does that not really matter to you as a Carolina fan?
Jordan was a little bit before my time as a Carolina fan. I was more like if Ed Cota had been there, I would have been like, holy shit, this is a big moment. But, but Jordan is the, and the crying Jordan whole thing is its own conversation. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. I'm curious as to see what happens with Roy Williams going forward. But because I was enjoying his sort of cranky tone over the past few weeks. But he's going to need, I think, a hip replacement, which is like pretty serious surgery. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him.
Well, look, the bottom line is, whenever you come out and tell reporters that you know so much more about basketball than they do, you're guaranteed to lose the national title game on a heartbreaking buzzer beating three. I mean,
but he
that's
does.
Just how it
I
goes.
Liked it. I liked him sticking up for himself. But listen, well, it's time. Let's move past the title game. Let's dive into award season. It's time to take a look at the big picture here. Let's start with all NBA teams. Who do you have on the first team?
Yeah, well, I think this is a weird year in general about the awards because the Warriors are just kind of dominating every storyline and Steph is so untouchable that you can't even really generate a debate. And the most fascinating thing here for the MVP, which is always sort of what leads and everything else follows, is that we haven't even gotten really the troll columns from people being like, yes, Steph is great, yeah. But like nobody's even bothering to try that. So I guess congratulations to our fellow media members. But that really says a lot about how dominant Steph has been and how dominant the Warriors have been. And I think one of the big questions, you know, pivoting into all NBA is just how many Warriors do you reward?
Should we go all of the Warriors starters except Harrison Barnes just to send a message to motivate him before the playoffs?
We just put him on the honorable mention and have everybody else on the first team.
Yeah,
you could do that. No, my first team, I think there's some pretty obvious picks. So I'll just rush through the obvious ones. I mean, Curry, obviously first team.
Yeah.
To me, Westbrook has got to be on the first team. Unbelievable season. And it's close between him and Chris Paul. Chris Paul's also been just crazy good without Blake Griffin. But I think Westbrook, the triple-double numbers are going to jump off the page. And it just kind of speaks to his evolution as a distributor. And he just brings it night after night after night after night. In terms of the front court, I'm still with LeBron and KD as my forwards. It gets tricky on the All-NBA because you do have to designate a center, or at least the NBA does. So what I did on the first team is I put Draymond in that center spot. Technically,
good.
I don't know if that's
cheating. I support that. Yeah.
I don't know if that's cheating or not, but to me, he's a first-team All-NBA guy this year. I don't know if you saw this stat that he's the first player in at least the last 23 seasons to have a plus 1,000 cumulative on the season. So like he just barely
passed. I have no idea what that means, but Draymond's awesome.
No, plus, yeah, come on, plus minus, you know, total over the course of a season, right? So he's out.
Oh, cumulative plus minus. I gotcha. Yeah.
So
wow, that is pretty impressive.
The Warriors have outscored their opponents by more than 1,000 points with Draymond on the court this year. It's the first time that's been done basically in the modern era. The previous record was by none other than 1996 Michael Jordan. So you're in pretty good company there. So to me, that's a first team All-NBA guy, and he plays a lot of center and they're best when he's playing center. So that was my first team.
Yeah. They also, just to talk about your first team, for a minute, there's no other center who's like first team quality in the NBA right now. And that alone, I think, is reason to put Draymond there because at least he's at that elite level. And it's interesting with him because it's hard to he plays most of his minutes with Steph, so it's hard to sort of like figure out his value, but I think he's every bit as crucial to the Warriors as Steph, because like when you take him off the team, he's missed I think one or two games. I think he missed the Mavericks game where they just didn't look the same, and so I definitely agree with you that he's up there. My one nitpick, though, is Russ as a first teamer. His defense has been pretty bad, and Chris Paul has been incredible this year.
I agree. I mean, Chris has been masterful, and he's been even better without Blake Griffin. That's a pretty legitimate, I guess that's a more legitimate debate than I was thinking it was. When you're looking at the advanced stats, just because Westbrook is so hyperkinetic, he tends to come out really well in the advanced numbers. I think also I tend to have a pretty strong bias towards winning, you know, and winning teams here. And so you're going to see that, you know, my squads are dominated by a lot of Warriors, Spurs, Cavs and Thunder, because I've thought that those four teams really have been pretty much a cut above everybody else this season. So
did you think at all about Kawhi on the first team?
I did. I was gonna say he's the next biggest snub, and he's really my first pick for that second team. I love Kawhi, you know, more than anybody basically, and I'm right up there with his biggest stands. But to me, LeBron, when you're looking at especially down the stretch how dominant he's been as an individual force, I think he can do everything that Kawhi's been doing in San Antonio, absent the three-point shooting, because you know, LeBron's jumper has been pretty broken. And I think he's still, you know, a greater force individually than Kawhi is in terms of directing action in the game, et cetera. And then I think, you know, Kawhi would struggle to do a lot of the things LeBron's doing from a playmaking standpoint if you switch them. And then, you know, going against Durant, I think that one's closer. But KD has also been phenomenal. He's been really consistent, efficient. So I think if I was going to swap him into one of those spots, I would swap him in for KD, but I still gave, you know, KD just that hair's, you know, width of an edge.
Yeah, I feel like you were talking about the like contrarian MVP columns, some of which I've written over the past few years. But I think that is kind of where we are with Kawhi versus LeBron and KD. Like, he's kind of like the thinking fans pick, but at the same time, like, don't overthink it because LeBron is still ridiculous. And Durant has been awesome as well. So I like Kawhi as like the MVP of the second team. Who else do you have there?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too, is I think you can make a case that Kawhi is like number two in the MVP voting. I mean, you can make that case for sure. And still there might not be a spot for him on the first team. So that's just positional weirdness. I mean, I've seen some people argue you should just get rid of positions on the All NBA team, and I think I'd be okay with that. That would make for a really tough decision between Draymond and Kawhi for that final spot, though, and I don't know how you really settle that one.
Yeah, I agree. So, all right, let's run through the rest of these. Let's run through the rest of the first and second team. And our next award is fakest tough guy, but we'll get to that.
So real quick, here's the second team. So Chris Paul, I think Kyle Lowry, you got to recognize what Toronto's done. He's clearly been their most important piece.
Yeah.
You know, they're the best team that's not, you know, a certified contender at this point. So I put him on there. Kawhi, like we mentioned, I also think LaMarcus Aldridge deserves to be second team. You know, he's been a pretty regular mainstay in the All NBA. He's been coming on really, really strong. And again, you look at San Antonio's team success. I think they have to have two guys. And with Duncan, you know, not playing so that many games.
The thing with LaMarcus that's crazy to me is after that Warriors game, when he got dominated by Draymond and then swore off Twitter, he legitimately had like a fantastic year after giving up Twitter.
Well, he was pretty good before, too. I mean, that's kind of the thing, is people love to nitpick on LaMarcus, and I understand why. I mean, some of the long twos and stuff just bother people, and there's always this sense that like he should be more formidable down low maybe than he is. He's a really, really, really talented player. He's really smart, and he's found a nice fit in San Antonio. And look, Duncan, you know, hasn't been playing that much for them. They haven't been leaning on him, and he slipped a little bit, I think, compared to last season. And Aldridge has made up a lot of that, and they're winning at a gigantic clip, I think, largely because you know, Kawhi and LaMarcus is a really powerful combination that puts up, you know, huge positive numbers when they're playing together, and they do it every single night. So I think that, to me, that's kind of all NBA criteria.
Yeah.
And like you were mentioning with the center position, it's tough. My second team center was DeMarcus Cousins, and I don't love it. I mean, we've talked about Cousins before. There's some pretty big red flags with him. I mean, obviously his numbers are off the charts. Can you reward a guy like that who's playing on a losing team, who's part of a losing environment, who doesn't, you know, totally seem to get it, who's at war with his coach, who's not necessarily making his teammates better? To me, I kind of had to swallow it and just do it because the other candidates, you know, weren't really jumping off the page at that spot.
Yeah. I'm looking up LaMarcus Aldridge's numbers, his splits. Unfortunately, they don't do pre-Twitter, post-Twitter. But post-All-Star, he's 54% from the field, 9 rebounds a game, 21 points a game in 32 minutes. That's pretty awesome. I would even, like, you could maybe put him at center, although he's really playing more forward. But yeah, I agree with you with Boogie. He's so good, and his, like, you can't really deny the numbers, but I don't know. Like we talked about it a couple pods ago. He's not taking enough blame, and the situation in Sacramento is so dysfunctional that it's hard to give him, it's hard to give him too much credit, but sure, throw him on the second team.
Yeah, actually, I kind of like that idea of moving Aldridge to the center spot. If you did that, I probably would promote Paul Millsap into that second team. You know, Millsap's had a great all-around season. Atlanta's kind of catching heat a little bit, you know, down the stretch. You know, he's got great defensive numbers too. I mean, he's right up there with the very best defensive players in terms of defensive stats. And he's just a rock, you know, totally unassuming, doesn't care about attention and any of that stuff. But he's always a guy who I look to kind of make sure is on my ballot, just kind of as a sign of respect. I love how he carries himself, and I love his just all around kind of no flaws nature of his game. So I guess if we can cheat with
he's certainly an Atlanta Hawk. He's perfect for them.
Yeah, totally. So he's maybe like that's the way you do team. It. Oh, for sure. I mean, maybe you do Kawhi, Millsap, and Aldridge as your second team bigs, and you can bump Cousins in that case.
Yeah.
I think the third team's pretty tricky. That's where a lot of the debates are. You know, the guards, to me, you're kind of picking from Damian Lillard, James Harden, Klay Thompson, John Wall. I settled on Lillard and Harden, but I'm open to counter arguments.
I think Lillard has to be there. He's just been so good. And this Blazers team is the biggest surprise in the NBA this year. You can't really keep him off. Harden he's also someone, he's in the boogie category where like your numbers are so good, we can't keep you off these teams, but you like still piss us off. This like, you're still not part of the solution in Houston. Let's put it that way.
Totally. And I was originally planning to leave him off, but I went through and I went back and it just, you know, 28-7-6 just jumps, you know, and those are insane numbers. You hardly ever see those numbers. He's leading the league in minutes. You know, he's leading the league in shots. And some of this is by design, leading the league in free throws. So it's tough. I mean, I don't love it. You know, there was a year actually kind of in the middle of Kobe's career after Shaq left where he got dumped to the third team all NBA because the Lakers weren't doing so well in the standings. They had kind of fallen off a little bit and people held it against Kobe because a lot of the same things that we're talking about here with Harden. So to me, it kind of seemed like a natural fit. Like, okay, give him that last third team spot. It's like, yes, we see what you're doing. Yes, we know you need some work, but still what you're doing in your role is pretty remarkable.
So for the third team big man, do you give it to Anthony Davis just so that he gets his bonus?
Now, that's a great question. I ultimately left him off because I didn't think he played enough games. So that's a pretty big chunk of the season.
Oh, yeah. He missed a ton of games.
You know, I was looking at guys like Paul George. You know, I had Millsap on my third team because I didn't cheat with the positions. You know, you can also potentially put Davis in there as the third team center. You know, I was kind of weighing a couple different people, whether it's Andre Drummond, you know, Davis. You know, ultimately, I settled on DeAndre Jordan with the Clippers.
Ooh,
you know,
he was on there. I like that.
He was on there last year. You know, just the insane efficiency, big time rebounding numbers, the stability without Blake, and kind of keeping them afloat. The pairing with Chris Paul has been unbelievable this year, and just also, you know, he's doing a little bit more offensively, not a ton more, and the flaws are still there, the free throw shooting and all that. But defensively, you know, he's still a presence. I think some people like to nitpick him, but you know, when he blocks a shot early in a game, you can just see there's a total impact in terms of how opposing wings decide whether or not to challenge him. And they've been, you know, pretty steady without Blake. I think they were like 30-15 without Blake, and you don't do that with only Chris Paul. I mean, he's going to need some help. So
yeah, for sure. I think he gets nitpicked too much. I think he's really valuable on both ends, and for some reason has not gotten quite enough credit over the years. And I don't really know why. Maybe it's just a bias against it. Like the Clippers annoy everyone. But he's been, especially when you take Blake off the floor so that there's not spacing issues, he's an awesome center.
You know, what's really interesting is, okay, so here's some of the names that we didn't even put on. You know, you got John Wall. You know, we didn't even really consider guys like Isaiah Thomas or Kemba. Their teams have been pretty strong in the East.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the shooting guard position, you know, DeRozan, Butler, you know, Dwayne Wade's actually an interesting name too, because he's had a really good year. I wonder if, you know, name familiarity will help get him onto some ballots. Maybe not. One of the biggest snubs I thought was Klay Thompson. I just couldn't really fit him in, but he's been ridiculous. You know, I mean, how many 40-point games has he had? You know, 20-point quarters, all this stuff. I think it's just tough for him because he's the third guy for them.
Yeah.
But, you know, Klay Thompson versus James Harden is like a really, really interesting debate for that spot because it's like they're like opposites on every single category. You know?
What do you value? Yeah, I like it.
One guy I didn't even really consider was Melo, and that would probably kind of anger Knicks fans, but
Melo's all set. He doesn't need the all third team validation.
Yeah, and he doesn't have those crazy numbers. You know, like he's got really good numbers, but not crazy numbers, and not enough to justify their losing. You know, you could also look at maybe Dirk, you know, potentially as a snub. But you know, I felt pretty good about this group. I didn't really feel like I was totally screwing anybody over. You know, another name to watch for this next year, though, is Karl Anthony Towns.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's right on the cusp. The only thing I would have done differently than you is give Anthony Davis a third team vote just so that the New Orleans people have to pay him, because who gives a shit if Tom Benson loses an extra $25 million? But
remember that's one less player you can surround him with. You know, like if you're giving him that chunk, that cuts into how good his supporting cast would be. So
does that come out of the cap?
Oh yeah, yeah. So it's just his salary. So you know, it increases.
Well, then that's dicey. Yeah, I don't know. something to ponder for future podcasts.
Well, yeah, it's because you're rewarding him in the short term. And kind of in the long term financially, but you're also punishing him for his own greatness because you're saying, hey, you can't have as good a teammate. So it's a tricky proposition. I don't know which you'd pick if you were him. Probably you just take the money and let the ownership and management figure it out.
Yeah. But beyond that, I feel like the snubs, like Dirk is, everything is gravy at this point. Melo is probably making yacht reservations as we speak for his postseason plans. And Wade has been really great, and totally caught me off guard by how durable he's been this year and how good the Heat have been. But again, I think he's someone who, like, third team doesn't really move the needle one way or another for him. And Towns is just like, but this time next year, he will probably be in the mix for first or second team because he's been so ridiculous.
And that's crazy to think about. I mean, that's an unbelievable like acclamation. So I think that's pretty much the All-NBA conversation. I don't think we totally screwed anybody or snubbed anybody. I mean, there's some minor conversations here, but I think for the most part, it's kind of straightforward.
Okay, we'll get into more awards soon, but first, let's take a quick break. Are you a baseball fan? Do you wish you could catch every Major League Baseball game? Do you wish you could catch every Major League Baseball game for free? Well, now you can. Only T-Mobile customers can get a free year-long MLB TV premium subscription, $110 value, so that you'll never miss a game. Hurry and sign up by April 10th to catch any out-of-market game all season long. That's 2,430 games and over 7,000 hours of baseball that will never touch your data plan all year long. Thanks to Binge On, only from T-Mobile, you can stream your favorite team's games without using any of your data, because T-Mobile has you covered, unlike those other guys. So get your free MLB TV premium subscription by April 10th and catch every moment all season long. And are you already a T-Mobile customer? Well, then you can just sign up at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Here's a little fine print for you. Sign up for MLB TV while on T-Mobile's network. New MLB.TV premium subscribers only. Blackout and other restrictions may apply, so visit MLB.TV for details. Binge On is available to only T-Mobile customers with a qualifying plan. Video typically streams at DVD quality. Video from participating services doesn't count against full speed data over T-Mobile's U.S. network. Third-party subscription charges may apply. That's my first time ever reading fine print. Big moment. All right, let's get back to the awards. Yeah, All right, so let's move on. Let's. I lied. I misread our list here. Our next award is best beef in the NBA this year. Do you have a favorite?
I mean, Matt Barnes versus the world, I think, is an ongoing great beef. it's been a pretty tough year for Matt Barnes, and I think just the latest D'Angelo Russell situation just causing him to go on another Instagram tear, where he's, you know, tweeting Derek Fisher memes. I wouldn't be surprised at all, actually, if he got on Photoshop and created those memes personally. I mean, I think it's that. I think it's that deep for him.
Barnes got a little dark. Barnes, a couple weeks ago when John Henson blocked him and sort of like mean mugged him for like a split second before he realized it's Matt Barnes and was like, oh shit, I should not be doing this. But that split second is all it took, because then Matt Barnes ran back into the locker room to find Henson after the game. And at that point, I think everybody sort of took a step back and was like, all right, this guy has some issues. This is getting a little bit dark.
I mean, probably the most disappointing thing about Memphis crashing and burning is that we might not get the Clippers-Grizzlies series that we really need, because you've got Matt Barnes, you've got Lance, and you've got Jordan Farmar against their former team. Plus, you've got all the bad blood between Blake and Zebo and all their history from previous playoff seasons. I mean, there's no way Matt Barnes isn't getting fined or suspended during that series. It would be impossible.
I have to be honest with you. I do not need I don't need the Grizzlies in the playoffs. The Grizzlies are fun to watch on like a one-off basis, but a prolonged series of Lance and Jordan Farmer and Matt Barnes and old Zebo. Old Zebo is tough for me to watch because it's sort of like coming to grips with your own aging. It's just like, it would be too much to handle on over 2 weeks.
Well, here's my counter argument to that. I either want them to be five or out, because I don't want them to get steamrolled by the Warriors, Spurs, or Thunder. I think that could get really depressing really quickly. The Clippers, for some reason, I feel like they could win a game or two off the Clippers and it would just get, you know, really junked up and there'd be tons of trash talking and chest bumping, maybe even a little forehead to forehead contact, you know, all the good playoff stuff that we like.
Yeah, that's right. My choice for best beef is between Kyrie and LeBron. They've had a nice little passive aggressive dynamic for a solid like 2 to 3 months now in the media. But I got to go with D'Angelo Russell versus the world, because he was taking a lot of heat last week and I'm pulling for him. I'm officially on Team D'Angelo. I was sort of like teetering on it last podcast, but I think he didn't leak the video, man. And this is all good. Everything's getting kind of ridiculous.
What did you make of his apology?
I think he's being honest. Like I believe in D'Angelo. I also think that people, like last week, the whole league kind of literally the entire league was chiming in on Twitter saying that like this is against the rules, like we'll never forgive this. But here's what is working in D'Angelo Russell's favor. He's cool. He's not like nerdy, like weirdo Kobe. Like I think people will like hanging out with him and will be willing to forgive him going forward.
Well, let's check in with Nick Young. Hey, Nick, have you forgiven D'Angelo yet? Oh, you not only haven't forgiven him, you've tweeted and then deleted the fact that you hate 2016 because of the way that the world is playing out. And on top of that, Byron Scott had to keep you away from the team because you're, quote, not mentally there with the guys. Okay. I guess to be determined on whether anybody else is going to forgive him.
Yeah. All right. So first of all, I'm also Team Nick Young in general, not necessarily in this particular dispute. But I sympathize with his feelings about 2016 and like crying Jordan Nation. However, he really needs to let this go. This is not a good look long term for him. And I hope, I mean, he's going to get himself traded to like Sacramento or Milwaukee or something. So which I think the damage is already done with the Lakers. But yeah, I definitely long term think that D'Angelo will come out looking a little bit better than Nick in all this. And it will go down as one of the crazier rookie year scandals since Jason Kidd in Dallas.
Another big winner here really is Jahlil Okafor, because remember at the start of the year how bad his rookie year was going? I mean, it was really off the rails so fast. And then D'Angelo Russell just swipes every headline. Everybody's going to forget Okafor. Okafor's, you know, getting knee surgery, which is itself, you know, a pretty bad headline if you're Philly. And meanwhile, yeah, everyone's caught up in the paparazzi point guard in LA.
We need like an extended back and forth conversation between Jahlil and D'Angelo about their rookie years. Maybe we can throw that on the Players Tribune, have them yeah, email back and forth and just vent and share and heal, you know?
Be the perfect rookie diary. That's really yeah, what we need.
We just need some healing. All right. So next award, fakest tough guy. Do you have a candidate? This was a Matt Dollinger category.
Well, you go first.
My fakest tough guy is Byron Scott. Because
let me
preface this by saying that I'm actually pretty sympathetic to people who sort of like romanticize the old school and talk about how it was different in their day, because like I get it, I'm like that, like however Byron Scott is just unbearable, and the way he's treated again, I'm team D'Angelo, the way he's treated D'Angelo Russell for the past 6 months is pretty bad. And the way, like, he is, I don't think there's been one press conference all year where he's taken any responsibility for the state of the Lakers. And I just can't deal with it anymore. I'm sick of hearing about the 80s and the 90s and the way his guys need to hold themselves accountable. And yeah, so he's the clear runaway winner for me.
He really is the worst, like, father figure coach ever. I mean, right now, at least in the league, you know, he's that typical, like, you know, law and order, you know, tough talk, no nonsense, that just absolutely backfires and blows up in his face. I mean, even this scandal, like, they have the ugliest locker room in the league right now, you know? I mean, that's, and I think a lot of that you have to trace back to him, of just never connecting with D'Angelo right off the top, and then never really, you know, not backing up sort of the tough talk in the media with actual actions and holding people accountable and holding Kobe accountable. I think ultimately this season just totally went off the rails right from the start when Kobe's jacking shots on opening night and everybody else is standing around and Byron's totally enabling that. I think you pretty much lose a lot of the guys as soon as that happens and as soon as that becomes the norm within the first couple of weeks, and everything from there is just sort of hot air. So I'm kind of with you.
Yeah, it's kind of clear that he's not the permanent answer in LA. So it's almost like he's a substitute teacher that's coming in as like Captain Hardass, and everyone, like, of course they're going to roll their eyes. And then he's like buddy buddy with Kobe, which I guess is fine. But it's just, I think everyone in LA it's healthy for everyone to move on at this point.
OK, here's a off the wall nomination that I think might get your ire a little bit. I don't know if fakest tough guy is exactly the right title for this, but I think we got to hold Russell Westbrook accountable slightly for his comments and treatment of Reggie Jackson's celebration recently. Did you see that?
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Go on.
Okay. So these guys dance and preen around, and they have been doing that for like 5 or 6 years. I mean, that's totally their shtick, and it's just gotten even crazier with the rookie campaign. You know, the pregame dances at this point are just so incredibly elaborate. You have to have like 4 or 5 vines to capture them. I mean, you can't even do it in like 2. They have to invent a new, you know, media service. Instagram has to up its video limits to capture the whole dances these guys do before every single game. Russell's got the 3-point celebrations where he's holstering things, he's jumping around, he's screaming. This guy's energy, excitement, it's all part of his identity. It's all what we
love.
It's
great. Yeah. It's all fantastic. And the pregame dances with campaign are great, but
that doesn't let you be the fun police when somebody else wins in a big rivalry game, which, you know, Detroit beating Oklahoma City, even if Kevin Durant isn't playing, is a big deal to Detroit, especially because they're in the playoff race. you know, Reggie Jackson, it just feels like he's the kind of person who's been bullied his entire life. You know, he's crying when he gets traded. he's throwing up in trash cans. I mean, I feel bad for the guy sometimes. He's kind of a sympathetic figure. I don't totally love his game. I think he's pretty mediocre. But hey, he had his big night. He gets to dance around and prance a little bit in that situation. Did he necessarily need to go right in front of these Thunder players? Maybe not. But I don't think that, you know, Westbrook and also Kevin Durant kind of got some comments too. I don't think these guys need to take what was clearly a personal animosity towards Reggie Jackson and turn it into some sort of sportsmanship violation. I think that's too much.
So, all right. It's hard to have an opinion here because there's a chance that we'll get like a long form dispatch from Ramona Shelburne telling us like exactly what happened in OKC between like Reggie Jackson and Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. But as it stands now, unless there's some sort of like revelation, like D'Angelo type situation that we don't know about, it's crazy how much those guys hate that dude. And he's only really guilty of wanting to like get paid and get playing time. So first of all, the way that he's been treated by OKC, he should be celebrating winning a game. I think that game was in OKC, right?
I think it was in Detroit, actually.
Okay. So either way, he should be celebrating beating that team. And like the KD and Russ need to understand that, like, let Reggie live, man. I mean, he's all he's doing is what any NBA player should want to do, which is start and make max money. It wasn't going to happen in OKC. So like, quit hating.
Look, I never liked losing to my little brothers in one-on-one, you know, I mean, that's like one of the worst ego deflating moments of your life when that happens.
Right.
And that's how Russell handled it, you know. His little brother got lucky, beat him in 21 on game point, didn't see it coming. And now he doesn't have a chance to get revenge. And now he's really, really angry about it. And he takes it out on his little brother. I didn't think that was the right way to play that.
Yeah, it's pretty weak, unless there's something that we don't know about. But I it's all kind of inexplicable how, because I haven't heard a single person on the Thunder even really acknowledge Reggie Jackson until last week. But
they really dislike him, and it got personal because they think, I mean, there was these allegations that maybe he was milking an injury after he didn't get traded before the extension deadline. And there was some other talk about, you know, how his commitment level and, you know, was
but
he
at
trying
the same
to
time, like go back a year and a half ago, he bailed those guys out in the Grizzlies series. Like the only reason they won that series is because he went off. I think it was like game four or something against the Grizzlies to save them when it was either Russ or KD just was struggling. And he sort of came out of nowhere. And that's when he first blew up. So shout out to Reggie Jackson, man. We're on your side.
Yeah, I just don't understand, if you're the Thunder stars and you're getting max deals, why are you begrudging anybody else the opportunity to do the same?
I think
that's sort of the big hypocrisy.
all right. Thank you for bringing that up. I like that. Rookie of the year, fairly simple, Karl Towns. Really, the only question is whether he'll get unanimous first place votes. Better question, who is the bigger surprise for you between Kristaps Porzingis and Miles Turner? Or what team should be more excited?
I think I'd be more excited if I had Porzingis at this point, just because of how quickly it's happened and how perfectly his skill set projects as being that, you know, that guy going forward, and just how difficult of a cover he's going to be for people.
Yeah.
You know, you look at some of these like all-star comps that people made, it kind of threw out, and, you know, didn't he get some Kevin Durant, Dirk Nowitzki, stuff like that before the draft? But you just look at where he is, and I mean, the sky's the absolute limit within, you know, 2-4 years. I know he's been kind of rough down the stretch, and they totally have to find the right coach for him. It's not Kurt Rambis, that's for sure.
Yeah. Let's keep it real. That was actually a stupid question. The answer is obviously Porzingis. Miles Turner is great, though. It's just there's only like so many ways you can sex up the rookie of the year conversation.
You like how I played that straight though.
I didn't sell you out. I appreciate it. Thanks for sticking with me.
Actually think the coach of the year one is more interesting. Because I think you've got Kerr, Dwayne Casey, Terry Stotts, Greg Popovich as always, Brad Stevens, your homie. And more. So where do you go?
We referenced this a couple pods back. I feel like Brad Stevens is going to win a couple Coach of the Year awards in the same way that Towns and Anthony Davis, like their day is coming a couple years from now. So I'm not even going to like he's done a great job. But I think that the most remarkable performance from a coach has been Casey, because he was really for me, I couldn't figure out why they brought him back. A lot of the players had completely tuned him out last year, and look at the Raptors now. Like they look like one of the more stable organizations in the league all of a sudden. So you got to give credit to Casey, and he's my choice. I love Stotts and Kerr again. Like the Warriors are going to probably win 73 games. And also win like every other award. So I think he's fine and doesn't care. And did he win it last year?
Well, so here's the thing. I'm going to ultimately cast my fake vote for Steve Kerr. And here's why. He could potentially win 140 games in his first two seasons and not have a Coach of the Year award to show for it. And that just seems so backwards and so wrong and just kind of unforgivable.
Well, wait, who won it last year?
Exactly. Mike Budenholzer. I mean, that to me was a total mistake.
Coach Buds.
I understand why people did that, but you look at Golden State and just the ability. And I think I've seen some people say, well, you know, how do you decide between Kerr and Luke Walton? And I think the counter argument there is that Steve Kerr established such a strong culture with his staff and with the organization that it was able to sustain through his own absence. And that says a lot about him as a coach. He also picked the right guy to step in and fill his shoes. That's a coaching decision. So to me, I give all those wins that, you know, Walton accumulated to Kerr. I give him credit for those. I also think there needs to be a makeup call from last year. I think he should have won it last year. I understand he's got by far, you know, the most talent, the most cohesive roster in the NBA. But we're talking about a team that very well could have the greatest regular season record of all time, one of the greatest regular season point differentials of all time. You know, you look in the post-Jordan era, it's probably the best team, you know, for sure of the post-Jordan era. And this guy is the one who's pulling the strings. He's the one who designed the philosophy. He's the one who turned, you know, Curry and Thompson completely loose. He's the one who understood, you know, Draymond's potential. He's the one who convinced Iguodala to go to the bench. I mean, some of these things happened last year, but the carryover this year has been unbelievable. The consistency factor is there. You know, being able to get them through, you know, some of these tough back-to-backs where they're not dropping multiple games in a row, almost having the perfect home court record. I mean, all of these things, you know, in some way or another, go back to coaching. And so that's why I go with Kerr here. But I would have Dwayne Casey second. And I think if Portland continues to close strong like they have been, I think Stotts can get the third place votes.
Yeah, this Blazers season is wild. And, you know, when you put it in the context of last year, of the Hawks stealing it last year from Kerr and Budenholzer, I actually like the Kerr choice, too. So we're giving our official podcast vote to Steve Kerr. But you know what I also like is that neither one of us mentioned the name Popovich through all of this, which just goes to show he's in like 2001 Shaq territory where people don't even bother voting for him. He's just dunking on everybody regardless. I like Kerr winning it. So let's take a quick break. Have you ever asked yourself why razors are one of the only products in the drugstore that are locked inside of a plexiglass case? It's because good razors cost too much, so much that people are more likely to steal them than just about any other product in the drugstore. That's why two guys started Harry's.com. They sell high quality blades that provide a close, comfortable shave for half the price you're used to. And I have to be honest with you, Harry's actually sent me a sample kit and it was fantastic. I've never invested in my shave. But I tried it and they send you some high quality shaving cream, which is better than the foam you're used to. And the blade is great. It's clean, no razor burn. So I highly recommend it. And Harry's gives you factory direct prices. They cut out the middleman and they ship the products right to your door. So stop getting ripped off. Harry's starter set is the best option for new customers. It's a great deal. For just $15, you get a razor handle, foaming shave gel, and three of Harry's five-blade German-engineered razors. Plus, for listeners of this show, Harry's is giving you $5 off your first purchase with the promo code OPENFLOOR. So go to harrys.com right now. That's HARRYS.com. And make sure you use the code OPENFLOOR at checkout to let them know who sent you. Baseball is back. The crack of the bat, freshly mowed grass, beer, hot dogs, Fenway Park, and of course, daily fantasy baseball. If you're not playing FanDuel this season, you're missing out on the most fun a baseball fan can have. On FanDuel, you choose. Do I compete to win cash from fans around the world or start a listener league with my friends? Open floor listeners, start your own fantasy baseball league. I'm sure we have 12 people who are into baseball enough to do that. Either way, you get to be the GM. Study the matchups, get your money ball on, and set your winning lineup. Entry fees start at just $1, and there's no season-long commitment. Play for one day or 180 days, plus the playoffs. And here's the best part. FanDuel is giving new players their first game risk-free. Here's what you do. Just go to FanDuel.com and enter the code OPENFLOOR. Then enter a FanDuel league or start one with your friends. If you don't win any prize in your first contest, you get that $10 right back to your FanDuel account for more play. That's FanDuel.com with our code OPENFLOOR for a risk-free tournament at up to $10. Let's move to best league pass team. Who do you have?
Well, I think we should probably qualify this by best league pass team, not name the Warriors, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I will straight up watch any Warriors game.
I think I might have watched every single game they've played this year. If not, it's really close. Definitely during the streak, I was watching every single game. And yeah, sometimes I can kind of like hear their announcers' voices in my dreams a little bit. Like it kind of starts seeping in. It might be a little bit of overdosing, but
yeah, no, I think it's that good though. When Grantland ended, I had like 2 months to just sort of chill. And so I wasn't even watching like that much basketball, but I still managed to catch every single Warriors game because there's just like it's so like the energy on the court, like they play so hard. And then, the spectacle of watching those dudes, like Clay's release alone is so impressive that like watching him get shots up, like in Utah the other night, like he caught a rebound and tied it with that three. And it was just like ridiculous how quickly he got that shot up the same way he did in Oklahoma City. They should definitely win. They're the obvious choice for best league pass team. And then the next week should be fun too.
For sure. So the other teams that are in this mix for me, Cleveland, mostly because of the drama and just what will LeBron do to show up his teammates at various points of the game or even when he's not playing to show up Ty Lue.
Cleveland is definitely the best social media team.
For sure. Oklahoma City always does really well for like entertainment value for me. Just off their top end talent alone. And then just the frustration of the fourth quarters this year and the inevitability of them blowing games has made them kind of one of those like train wreck teams a little bit too. So you have the combination of like the best duo in the league plus like, how is it going to go wrong? I mean, that always kind of sucks me in. Two other teams that actually played each other in a great game last week, Portland and Boston. I think you got to put both those teams on this list too, right?
Yeah. I mean, Portland is my choice. Portland and the Kings. Portland is in the Warriors category where like I will just sit back and watch those guys do ridiculous things. And then the Kings, man, speaking of ridiculous, like the other night, I think you posted a clip of it with Rondo, and it was Rondo and Boogie clapping at the ref simultaneously, and they both got teed up. Didn't one of them get ejected too?
So Rondo gets ejected and Cousins draws whatever was his 16th technical, so he gets a one game suspension. So combined and there was 6 seconds left in the game. They were winning by double digits.
It was the end of the Wizards game. It was awesome.
So that simultaneous clapping towards Mark Davis and Rondo and Mark Davis have that's actually probably the best beef in the NBA. If you want to go back and look at various clips, but they cost themselves, you know, ultimately combined hundreds of thousands of dollars with the suspension. You know, I mean,
oh,
Cousins,
man.
By doing that and getting sucked into that, it's just such a dumb decision. But that's the Kings for you.
It was the perfect Sacramento Kings in 2016 highlight. Who is your worst league pass team?
That's tricky. There's so many that kind
I've
of
got,
aggravate
I've got
me.
One. My team is the Bulls. Every time I watch on a Bulls, every time I turn on a Bulls game, I get pretty sad. Because the team just doesn't make sense. I can't watch Pau Gasol. I had high hopes for Hoiberg, and it hasn't happened. And it's dark, man. The Bulls are one of those teams that you look to as like an organization that has its shit together, and now they really don't. The Bulls and the Pacers both are generally like rock solid, and they've both been kind of free-falling over the last month or two. And so yeah, I'm out. If the Bulls are on League Pass, I'm out.
Yeah, I hate to be like the most obvious cliche guy. I think I have to go Nets though. I mean, if there's one team basically just I can't bring myself to really watch their games. I don't see the hope factor. I don't see any direction. You know, I can't even have fun with like, oh, this guy could talk myself into somebody's potential, or like with the Sixers, like TJ McConnell, like he's kind of a show in a little way, you know, Phoenix.
The cliche choice would have been the Sixers. I was thinking about this and didn't even consider the Nets. They are basically not in my version of the NBA.
Yeah, I was going to say you thought they got contracted probably is what happened.
Exactly. Like, I don't know, man. It's rough. They also throw out players like, I think, is it Chris McCullough? They throw out guys that I did not know were in the NBA, which is pretty impressive. I'm happy that UNC's Wayne Ellington is getting some love over these past few months. Some time to shine in Brooklyn. But yeah, the Nets are an automatic channel change.
The Pelicans without AD are way up there for me too, for similar reasons. I mean, they've had so many injuries that it's just depressing. And then, you know, some of these guys, I mean, Omer Asik, I hate to bang on this guy every week, but just getting up to watch that guy play is rough.
You know what? I'm also bummed. I'm bummed that this year is happening now, because I think had they tanked last year, there were a lot of good players at the top. Although I don't know if they had their pick, but next year's draft is going to be crazy deep. But this year, you're not necessarily getting another superstar unless you land number one or number two. And, so it's tough. I would love to get AD some help, but it's this lost season may not even like be worth that much. And speaking of which, we've got the biggest box office flop from this season. And I got to go Pelicans, man, because they just like coming into the year, they were supposed to be another contender in the West, if not for the crown, then at least in that like 4, 5, 6 range. And they've been bombed out and depleted, to quote Dave Chappelle. And also like the whole future now looks uncertain. Like Anthony Davis can't stay healthy. Drew Holiday, like the injuries are not a coincidence. Basically, it's not just like this is all bad luck. Like these are issues that all these guys have. And then you look at the ownership, like Gentry was supposed to be a great coach. He struggled this year. It's tough.
I think the only other team that you could really put in the same convo or above them, it's gotta be the Rockets, just going from conference finals, lots of momentum. They've pretty much had their main guys healthy. They've had Harden for huge minutes all season long. And, you know, to just basically come out of the gate so poorly and then not really seem like you care to recover, have the Ty Lawson thing blow up in your face, never establish a defensive identity. I mean, Daryl Morey's like at the Sloan Conference talking about how much Houston's defense sucks, like that, you know, openly. Like that's a bad, that's kind of a bad place to be. I mean, the same guy was like trash talking me on Twitter last year for not having Harden as the MVP. So that's a pretty steep fall, and you know, whatever.
Well, and the other team is my Washington Wizards, who came into the year basically, they were unofficially playing for Kevin Durant, and a lot of people picked them to finish like second or third in the East. Going small was supposed to sort of change everything. And I was a tentative believer. I didn't think that they would finish that high, but I also did not think that like the bottom would fall out. And I mean, now like Durant's out the window for me, like the biggest blow is Beal, and his future is now sort of completely up in the air. And they actually are decent when he's on the floor, but or at least not like 10th in the East. But yeah, I think Wizards, Pelicans, and Rockets sort of three-way tie for most depressing season, and at least among contenders. Let's move to a brighter topic. Who's your lottery winner, player or coach set to cash in?
I think it's Hassan Whiteside. I mean, I think...
Oh, God, that's a good one.
This season could have gone so many directions for him. And I think, kind of ironically, it's gone like the perfect direction, even though he's not starting. You know, even though he's not sort of that very typical, like, alpha center putting up huge numbers. I mean, like, the guy gets his numbers every single night. He's found the right role. He's been able to get onto functional defenses where that was kind of a question in the past. Like, does he have a positive or negative impact? Even better for him, I mean, he's going to be in the playoff stage. I think Miami's got a chance to win a series, and potentially, depending on seeds, you know, they could maybe win two. And he's, there's not very many centers on the market. He's, you know, still fairly young, entering his prime. He's super athletic. And like, if you have a hole and you've got cap space and everyone's going to have cap space, you're going to be looking at him, and all the red flags that were there before, they seem diminished. I mean, he's done a good enough job keeping those in check, especially down the stretch here, that he's not dealing with that kind of, you know, negative buzz that maybe was circling him last year or coming into the season. So to me, I don't know really how this year would have gone better for him from a, you know, contract earning perspective.
I love it. I was gonna go with some cliche Nick Batum, DeMar DeRozan, Luke Walton, but I love Whiteside as our lottery winner. It's funny, man. Like, I'm just as excited for the Hassan Whiteside free agency sweepstakes as I am for Durant. Because I like, basically wherever he goes, he's getting $100 million, and it's going to be hilarious. And like, it could work out. He's very good, but it's funny. Like, I interviewed Amari, I think not last week, but the week before, and we were talking, and I was like, so like, are you mentoring Hassan, and like, how are you, or do you draw on any of your own experience as you were coming into the league at Phoenix? And Amari was like, when I was coming into the league at Phoenix, I was 18 or 19. Like, Hassan is 27. Like, he should get it by now. and it's really true. Like, we talk about him as this sort of like young player, but he's in his prime, and you know, it's not every day that a guy who puts up double doubles with four or five or with three or four blocks a night in his prime is a free agent. So it'll be fun to see where he ends up. I mean, if the Lakers don't get Durant, I hope they just go full on anarchy and grab Rondo and Whiteside and just roll the dice, man.
That's a nightmare scenario that I now am rooting for. Hey, one other guy who's kind of off the radar, who I think has made himself some money this year, Bismack Biyombo in Toronto.
Ooh, good call.
They've had awesome like on off numbers with him. Defensively, like, he's kind of emerged into what maybe people thought earlier in his career. I mean, this is, you know, he kicked around last year and really, you know, basically got given up on by Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of surprising, like, what does that say about him, you know, when that happened? And for him to kind of make a real impact in Toronto for a winning team, I think he's going to get a lot of playoff minutes and pretty big role there. Just because they like him as a better defensive player than Valanciunas, the numbers kind of bear that out. I think that's going to put him in position where, again, not tons of, you know, relatively young bigs on the market. You know, now he's in position to make some real money.
Dude, I love Biombo. He's exactly what I want from a center. Like, just defend and grab rebounds, and like, we're set. I was a big believer in him, like, coming into the, I think it was like 2010 draft or maybe a few years later than that. But it's been cool to watch him sort of like put it all together for Toronto. And I think he'll help them in the playoffs. I'm also curious as to like just how much he'll cost, because as like a bargain, he's awesome. But if you're having to pay Bismack Biyombo like $12 million a year, it's like a little bit dicier. So it'll be interesting to see where he ends up.
I totally agree with that. And I also think he needs to be really smart about his decision, because his career could have gone a lot of different ways. He found a pretty good fit in Toronto. And I think sometimes guys have that breakout year. They want to cash in, take the biggest check. And they don't necessarily want, you know, consider like, how am I going to be used? What system am I going to? What's the personnel like around me? That fit in Toronto for him, based on what he can and can't do, is really good. I'm not saying he needs to give them some gigantic discount, but I think there's real benefit to him to staying put.
Yeah. All right. So we're running a little bit long, so we should speed through our last couple here. But this has been great. This has taken me out of my post title game depression. Sixth man of the year. Who do you have?
Iguodala. The knock there is that he's missed, you know, a fair bit of time, but I don't see any bench player having the kind of impact that he does. I know he doesn't have the scoring numbers like some of these guys who just come in and chuck, but in terms of stabilizing presence, contributions all over the court, you know, his 3-point shooting has been huge release valve. You know, their offense looks different when he's out injured. You know, it's tough that he's missed basically a quarter of the season, but it bothers me less in an award like sixth man than it does like for all NBA or for MVP. So I would stick with him.
Yeah. He's incredibly valuable. And will be like, his health is probably one of the two or three biggest X factors for the Warriors and whether they can actually like finish this off with a title. Can we get some love for Evan Turner, though?
Ooh, okay. Make the case.
I mean, my case is that I just love watching him, and he like half the time is the lead ball handler for the second unit. Some of the times he's playing power forward for them. Like he's kind of all over the place, but there's no better credit to Brad Stevens maximizing what guys do well than Evan Turner in Boston. I think he's a really valuable piece, and especially off the bench. I mean, there aren't that many six man options. Iggy is definitely the obvious choice, but I don't know how many awards Evan Turner is going to have a shot at. So I got to cast my vote with Evan Turner.
I can respect that. And I also generally in the six man voting, I kind of like rewarding the best guy for good benches, you know, or like teams that are going pretty deep and really relying on them. That's been kind of a favorite strategy of mine. I tend to give Manu a lot of love for that over the years for the same reason. So, you know, I think that fits in Boston too.
Least valuable. Do you have a choice?
Well, this is what I love about the real plus minus rankings. Because you can actually go into just the bottom of the barrel and just completely, you know, scrape it and see what comes up. And let me just read some of the names who are like the absolute worst by real plus minus and see how many of these you just start laughing at. Okay.
Yeah.
Archie Goodwin.
Shabazz Muhammad. Yeah.
Shabazz Muhammad. Nick Young. Andrea Bargnani.
Oh, man.
Nick Stauskas. Let's say Jahlil Okafor. Ty Lawson.
This hurts. This hurts. This is all so real.
let's see. Who else do we have in here? You know, PJ Hairston. Actually, here's an interesting one. Derek Rose.
Oh,
Tayshaun Prince, Austin Rivers.
Tayshaun's a good one, man.
Austin Rivers. Yeah, you just go right down the list. I mean, it's kind of funny to do that and just see who pops up. I think this, from a basketball perspective,
that's a really sad list.
Oh, I know. This is why I loved looking at it. I mean, this is what I do.
I'm going to need some time to recover from that journey through the bottom.
I think from a pure basketball perspective, you can make a really strong argument that it's Kobe, though.
Oh, my hot take was going to be Blake Griffin. Beat the crap out of an equipment manager, left, the team got better. Sorry, Blake, you are least valuable for the regular season. Although I'm actually pretty excited to watch the Clippers now that Blake's back. And it's kind of like an X factor going into the playoffs to maybe mix things up a little bit. But yeah, I mean, Kobe, I'm team Kobe, but I get it as far as his value is concerned.
I think part of it is just that none of the other guys really ever found any sort of a positive fit. Like when your positive spin is, hey, Brandon Bass really is doing a nice job fitting in, like that is a bad season.
Yeah.
Because Brandon Bass could fit into any situation. You know what I mean? Like he could be in the middle of a hurricane and he'd still be doing what he does. So I think that the stunting of the development or the awkwardness with Russell and Clarkson and even Randall and having those guys just never really, you know, mesh. It all goes back to Kobe, and I'm not begrudging him. I think the farewell tour has been incredibly entertaining. I understand what the Lakers were trying to do, but I think he's got to be in that conversation.
Yeah, for sure. He's also, he's like kind of the reason that things have just been awkwardly in limbo for 2 years. And that's not helping his value case. last two MVP. Obviously, Steph is going to win it. I think I'm actually pretty excited for like the one or two writers who don't vote him number one. And then the internet has this big witch hunt to find out who it was. But really, that's the only question is whether he'll be like unanimous or there'll be a couple contrarians out there.
So they do publish who you vote for now. So will that scare people straight?
I don't know. I remember like a couple years ago when there was like this big outrage over Gary Washburn from the Boston Globe because he like dared vote Carmelo number. Or I think he voted for Carmelo as MVP. And it's like I just don't take this stuff that seriously as long as the right guy wins. But it's always funny to watch people like flip out.
Well, Carmelo over LeBron was so egregious. I mean, that was really bad.
But Carmelo had a good year, man.
Well, I had a good year that year too. I mean, I didn't get any votes.
Fair enough.
Okay. Well, so let's do this though. Who do you think will get the MVP vote if somebody casts the protest vote and doesn't pick Steph?
Well, so that's my last question is who is your second most valuable? To answer your question, I think people will vote Kawhi, particularly if the Spurs can win one or two games against the Warriors later this week. But my second most valuable is Chris Paul.
I love it. Here's a conspiracy for you. I think it's going to be LeBron.
Really?
And I think that all this stuff about LeBron needing the attention that we've talked about on previous podcasts, all this kind of lashing out, look at me stuff, all the trying to like keep his teammates in line, get them to step up for the playoffs and on and on and on. Clearly, recognition matters to him. Remember how upset he got when he didn't win Defensive Player of the Year a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
I think his people are going to be calling in every favor to every media member.
Clutch Sports ballot stuffing.
I'm saying if I was Rich Paul and it was my job to keep LeBron happy, I would be on the phone with every single reporter just talking up his MVP candidacy. Come on, man. You know he could do the same thing if he was in Golden State and he had all that talent around him. Look who he's playing with. He's dragging these guys. I may be making that argument the whole way. And I would just be trying to get one person on board because LeBron never won that unanimous MVP. If Steph gets a unanimous MVP and LeBron doesn't have one, how is LeBron going to sit with that? I mean, how's that going to sit with LeBron?
Man. Yeah. I don't think these people should care, but you might be right that that
don't you think LeBron cares? Don't you think LeBron cares way too much?
Yeah, so it's basically LeBron, Chris Paul, Kawhi, and then does Durant make your? I think Durant's the fifth guy.
I think my order would be Steph 1, Kawhi 2, LeBron 3, Durant 4, Paul 5.
Okay. No love for I thought I was going to get a more receptive audience with CP3 as number 2. But no,
I love it. I love it, but I'm not all the way in on it, but I don't have any problem with it. I wouldn't bat an eyelash. I mean, he is unbelievable to watch in person. I've seen him a lot more this year than I ever have in the past. His command over the game and just his ability to just break guys down and get exactly where he wants to get, just possession after possession after possession. It's really unrivaled. Steph does it in a different way, but I mean, I would start a franchise with Chris Paul over just about everybody else in the league. He's on that very short list.
Yeah, if you were starting one for like the next 3 years, he'd be perfect. I have to say, closing it out, I'm really excited for the Rich Paul Boss Tweed election fraud era here. It's gonna be a fun little race the next 10 days. But thank you. This was fun. This was therapeutic after last night. And I don't know, any final words?
No, I mean, just sorry. You know, I felt bad. Like, I didn't even really enjoy the game because I was worried. I didn't know if you were going to, honestly, I didn't know if you were going to make this call. I'm pretty impressed. And I didn't know, I also didn't know what shape you were going to be in. I was a little worried about that too. Like, maybe we were going to have to get like a filter because you're slurring your speech because you hadn't slept. And you know, I was worried maybe I could hear like a burning couch behind you. I had a lot of concerns, and I just want to say congratulations. You pulled it together, handled it like a pro. I thought you showed a lot of respect to Nova. I mean, you really sounded like a college coach. You handled yourself way better than Coach K, honestly, if you think about it.
And really, that's all that matters. That's all that I care about. You know what, Ben? It's a new day. We'll be back with an NBA playoff preview next week, I guess. Does the playoff start next week? No, that's the playoffs start next weekend, right?
Yep. So we'll be ready to talk playoffs next week for sure.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you. And we'll be back next week.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.